You can turn to Exodus 16 if you like to. We'll get started there. Grocery shopping. Exodus 16. Some ways, this is something that I really want to grow in. But I was thinking about this the other day, and you know, sometimes where you're looking for God to do something, say from this direction over here, and you're looking and you're just not seeing it. And then maybe sometime later you realize, oh, look what happened over here. You know, you were looking over here and he was sort of like sneaking up behind you or whatever you want to call it. And I thought we would look at some things like that. I don't normally put like a title to a teaching, but if I was to put a title on this, I think that that song, Tenderly He Watches Over You, that would be a good, like, communicate what I think we're going to be looking at this morning. So in Exodus chapter 16 and in verse 15, it says, "And when the children of Israel saw it, they said one to another, it is manna, because they didn't know what it was. And Moses said to them, this is the food which the Lord has given you to eat." The word manna, different, you know, translators or scholars or whatever, they do different things with it. One of them says it is whatness, which uses a word like that. You know, basically, if we were to put this in the way we talk today, verse 15, the children of Israel saw it, they said one to another, what is it? Because they didn't know what it was. And then Moses had to tell them, this is the food you guys are going to be eating for the next 40 years or whatever it was. You know, but it was pretty cool that they were looking right at what God had provided for them. It was there, right? It was right there. They're looking at it. They didn't know that was God's provision. It was right there. And they said, what is it? That's what you're going to be eating. And I thought that was pretty cool, where they were looking right at God's provision and they just didn't recognize it. If you'll turn to Genesis chapter 37, we're just going to be looking at a couple situations where, you know, God set some things up and it was going to be a blessing to people, but maybe it took some time before it really dawned on them, you know, to like unfold it, so to speak, where they can really see it. Oh, wow, look at all this. All of this has been leading to this. So in Genesis 37, in verse 13, it says, "And Israel said to Joseph, do not your brethren feed the flock in Shechem? Come, and I'll send you unto them. And Joseph said to Israel, here am I." Okay. Verse 14, "And he said to him, go, I pray you, see whether it's well with your brethren and well with the flocks, and bring me word again. So he sent him out of the vale of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. And a certain man found him, and behold, he was wandering in the field. And the man asked him, saying, what are you looking for? And he said, I'm looking for my brethren. Tell me, I pray you, where they feed their flocks. And the man said, they left here, for I heard him say, let's go to Dothan. And Joseph went after his brethren and found them in Dothan." It's an interesting little deal there. This will come to, if you keep, I guess you could keep your finger, turn to Genesis 19, just as a little side note. I don't remember where this other verse is. There's some verse, is it in Hebrews someplace? Be careful to be hospitable to strangers or something like that, for thereby some have entertained angels underwear. Yeah. It's in Hebrews, isn't it, someplace? Well, here in Genesis 19, we're just going to read two verses. Well, first verse, we'll read verse 1. It says, "And there came two angels to Sodom at even, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom, and Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet him, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground." So that says there came two angels to Sodom. Then if you drop down to verse 12, it says, "And the men said unto Lot," so on and so forth. Well, who were those men that were talking to Lot? They were the angels back in verse 1. You know, and you'll see other records like that. I think it's Manoah's wife, you know, Samson's pop, where, you know, the angel came And then so she tells her husband about, you know, this man of God came and he told me such and such. And so they prayed, oh God, could you please send a man of God back to tell us some more stuff? Okay, so the angel pops up again the next day and they're talking to him, and then such and such happens. And then, you know, the angel or the man ascends up into the flame. And they're like, I never saw a guy do that before. You know, so just a couple places. And there's others where, you know, they look like men and yet, you know, they weren't. So that's just kind of interesting here when you look at Genesis 37:15. It doesn't say Joseph found a certain man. It says a certain man found him. And it doesn't say that Joseph asked the man, you know, have you found my brother? The man asked Joseph, what are you looking for? It's just interesting. So then, you know, part of it. So then Joseph, he finds his brethren. You know, they throw him in the pit. They put the blood on his robe of heirship. It's not a coat of many colors, like the King James says. It was the robe of heirship. It designated that Joseph was going to be the heir. And that's why his brethren envied him. Because, you know, we're all older than he is. He's the runt of the litter, and he gets the robe of heirship. So, you know, they threw him in the pit. Then the Ishmaelites come along. They sell him into slavery. And the Ishmaelites sell him to Potiphar in Egypt. You know, it just goes on and on. Look at, I guess, chapter 42 of Genesis while we're here. And just thinking about with Joseph, you know, God had given Joseph those visions. And a lot of this we're not reading because I know you're familiar with it. Remember the visions where the sheaves were bowing down to Joseph and his brethren said, shall we worship you? And then later God showed Joseph the sun and the moon and the stars were worshiping him. And Israel says, what shall your mother and I and your brethren worship you? He was the runt of the litter, Joseph. He was the youngest kid. And you know, so, but he had a connection with God. God was giving him this information. And here they are throwing him in a pit. Now they're selling him as a slave, you know, to the Ishmaelites. Then they sell him to Potiphar, the captain of the guard. I was thinking about that this morning. You know, then Potiphar's wife, you know, she says, you know, I want to tumble in the hay with you. He said, forget it. Then, you know, she sets him up to where she accuses him of trying to do what she was actually trying to do with him. So here's Potiphar, who was the captain of the guard. Doesn't say he was the captain of the librarians, you know, or, you know, a pencil pusher. He was captain of the guard. What kind of a guy do you think is captain of the guard? Not the kind of guy that, yeah, he's not a librarian. You know, this guy, it's not that he was just one of the guards. He was the captain. You really wouldn't want that guy to get a little bit hacked off at you. Well, anyway, so his wife says, Joe tried to, so he gets thrown into prison. Here's Joseph this whole time. What did he do wrong? Nothing. In chapter 42 of Genesis here, we'll pick it up, I guess, in verse 17. Now, you know we skipped a lot of stuff here. By now, Joseph is number two in Egypt, and his brothers are coming down to buy food. So right now, they don't know that they're talking to Joseph. And he set them up. You know, he did some stuff you're pretty familiar with. Anyway, chapter 42, verse 17, and he, Joseph, put them all of his brothers, together in jail 3 days. You know, why do you put them all together? I mean, if you watch those TV shows, you know, you separate them out so they can't get their story straight, you know? Why do you put them all together? Why do you put them in there for 3 days? Joseph, I mean, if you know it's what we skipped over, this guy is tapped in. He's listening and he's obeying. Does even Joseph know why he did it? I'm sure he knew that he did it because that's what God said. Why did God say it? He's pretty smart. You know, just go with it. Anyway, he put them all together into jail for 3 days. And Joseph said unto them the third day, listen, do this and live because I respect God. Verse 19, if you're true men, let one of your brethren be bound in the house of your prison. You go, carry food for the famine of your houses. But bring your youngest brother unto me. That's how I'm going to verify that you're telling me the truth, and you shall not die. And they did so. Verse 21, and they said one to another, we are verily guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the happiness of his soul. No, the anguish of his soul. When he cheered us on? No, when he besought us. And we wouldn't listen. Therefore is this anguish come upon us. That's the same Hebrew word where they translated anguish in the first part of the verse and distress in the last, same word. Verse 22, and Reuben answered them, saying, didn't I tell you, saying, don't sin against the child, and you wouldn't listen? Therefore, behold, also his blood is required. And they didn't know that Joseph understood them, because he talked to them by an interpreter. Why'd he do that, I wonder? This guy is really, you know, a lot of stuff with Joe, with a lot of things, you know, he didn't have to know why. All he needed to know was, this is what God said do, and so he did it. But It's neat, in verse 21, it says, they saw the anguish of his soul, and that he besought us. And the context pretty well tells you, he wasn't beseeching them, you know, give me a plate of spaghetti with garlic bread. You know, the context lets you know, he was beseeching them, don't do this to me. And that by itself would let you know, Joseph, we're going to read some stuff, and maybe we should read it first. Let's go, we'll get there. Go to Psalm 105. Kind of don't need this, but it's interesting in that it helps to fill out the picture a little bit more also. Psalm 105. And this is, again, it's along the lines of tenderly God watches over us. You know, would it be possible that Joseph might have been sort of scratching his head saying, what's going on here? I would think that would be a very real possibility. You know, like the children of Israel, they're looking at God's provision saying, what is it? I imagine Joseph could very easily have been saying, what is this all about? You know, he didn't do anything to deserve any of that stuff. So why is all that stuff happening to him? Psalm 105, verse 17 says, he, talking about God, sent a man before them, even Joseph, who was sold for a servant, whose feet they hurt with fetters. He was laid in iron until the time that his word came, the word of the Lord proved him. So, you know, it says his feet they hurt with iron. Well, you know, who wants that? So here's Joe. All these things have happened to him. Well, what did he do? And God had been giving him information prior to any of this stuff happening, right? And the sheaves bowing down to him, the sun among the stars. Here they're throwing him in prison, selling him as a, you know, human trafficking, I guess you'd call it. You know, Potiphar buys him, then his wife wants to tumble in the hay. He keeps his integrity, and for keeping his integrity, he gets thrown in from being a slave, now he's a prisoner. You know, and then he interprets the dreams. He tells the one guy, remember me when you get back to Pharaoh? Well, the guy got back to Pharaoh and forgot. You know, all that stuff. Look at, now go back to Genesis chapter 45. And this is sort of, kind of tie it in, I think, to that Exodus, whatever it was, 16, 15 thing. You know, where they looked at God's provision and they said, what is it? Genesis 45. And we're just going to read verse 5. And Joseph's talking to his brothers here after all these things have happened. He says, now therefore, be not grieved, nor angry with yourselves that you sold me here. For God did send me in front of you to preserve life. Was Joseph saying that when they threw him in the pit? No. He had anguish. Mm-hmm. He was beseeching them, which tells you, even Joseph himself, he didn't know why that was going on. But after the whole thing unfolded, hey, what about that guy? That certain man that found him wandering in the field? What if that certain man hadn't told him, hey, your brothers are over there? Mm-hmm. So many things that, you know, like, once you see how it ended up, then you can back it up and say, son of a gun. You know, all this stuff. And that's how God, you know, to preserve life in verse 5. Yeah, it preserved their physical lives, those human beings at that time. What about preserving the Christ line? A little bit of life involved in that, huh? You know, and just so many things that, you know, as things are happening, maybe we don't realize a lot of stuff, maybe, that it looks like, why? What is this? But God loves us. And just because we don't know everything, like the reason behind everything, that does not mean that God's not doing stuff for us. Joseph didn't know until a lot of things had unfolded. then I'm sure Joseph himself was saying, that guy back in Dothan, or Shechem, wherever it was, that son of a gun, you know, was that really, how come that guy, how come they threw me in the, how come Potiphar's wife, blah, 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 oh, check, 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 got it, you know, but it took a while. But all that time, even though Joseph may not have been aware of all of those things during while they were going on, God was aware. God was taking care of things, right? I mean, Joseph had anguish. Even when Joseph had anguish, was God taking care of Joseph? Yeah, he was. He was tenderly watching over Joseph. Even when Joseph's feet were hurt in fetters, was God still watching over Joseph? Yeah, he was. And it's just, I think some of that stuff is great to see. Exodus chapter 18 is a great one to look at also. Exodus 18. About there. It's right after Exodus chapter 17. That's what Wesley would say. I figure since this is his fellowship, I'm going to say some of that stuff right
now. No, you don't have to.
All right, Exodus chapter 18. We're just going to take this one from the top, okay? It says, when Jethro... That's not Jethro Clampett. When Jethro, the priest of Midian, Moses' father-in-law, heard of all that God had done for Moses and for Israel's people, and that the Lord had brought Israel out of Egypt, then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took Zipporah, Moses' wife, after he had sent her back, and her two sons, of which the name of the one was Gershom, for he said, I've been an alien in an alien land, or a stranger in a strange land. The word Gershom means refugee. How'd you like that? Oh, what'd you name your kid? I named him Refugee. And that's what Moses was. Remember, Pharaoh was going to try to kill him? That's why he had to leave Egypt. So Moses, you know, he was brought up in the house of Pharaoh. Moses' mom and dad, they still lived in Egypt. Moses has to get out so Pharaoh's henchmen don't kill Moses. So Moses, having to leave his country for safety in another country, that's what a refugee is. And so he names his first kid Refugee. So the name of the one was Refugee, or Gershom. For he said, I've been a stranger in a strange land, or a foreigner in a foreign land, whatever. Verse 4. And the name of the other was Eliezer, which means God of help. For the God of my father said he was my help and delivered me from the sword of Pharaoh. And Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, came with his sons and his wife unto Moses into the wilderness where he camped at the Mount of God. And he said to Moses, I, thy father-in-law Jethro, am come unto you and your wife and her two sons with her. And Moses went out to meet his father-in-law. Now that's kind of weird in a little bit, isn't it? Like, verse 6 says, he said to Moses this stuff. And then verse 7 says, and Moses went out to meet him. Hmm. Well, how's Moses going to say it to him if Moses isn't standing right in front of him anyway? Mm-hmm. It's sort of like, I think of it, if you wanted to have a conversation with the President of the United States, you think you'd be able just to walk right up to him? Hey, Donnie, you know, blah, 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 and talk about whatever. That would probably happen, right?
Yeah,
probably not. You might have some guys in nice suits, you know, little curly things, something stuck in the ear, little bulge under the shoulder. Can I help you, sir? You know, you might have a few guys like that that you'd be talking with. Maybe you could see the president over there, but you might actually be talking to these gentlemen first. And then these gentlemen might convey what you had to say to somebody else who might convey it to that person. And if the president wanted to talk to you, then the president would come and talk to you. Well, you know, here's Moses. You know, very likely, more likely than not, that was the same situation there. Otherwise, why does Moses have to come and meet him after in verse 6 he's already standing there talking to him? He's talking to an emissary or what do you call that. And that guy went and told Moses, hey, there's a guy here who says he's your father-in-law. Got your wife and kids. Oh, yeah, sure, I'll go talk. So then verse 7, Moses went out to meet him. That's what happened. And it says, Moses went out to meet his father-in-law and did obeisance and kissed him. Moses did obeisance to his father-in-law. Doesn't say his father-in-law did obeisance to Moses. Isn't that interesting? And they asked each other their well-being, and they came into the tent. And that's got that covering. Remember in the east, there was the covenant of salt, there was putting your mantle over somebody, or if they entered into your tent, that covering, how it represented their protection, that they guard you with their life. So it says in the end of verse 7, they came into the tent. Verse 8, and Moses told his father-in-law all that the Lord had done unto Pharaoh and to the Egyptians for Israel's sake, and all the travail that had come upon them by the way, and how the Lord had delivered them. And Jethro rejoiced for all the goodness which the Lord had done to Israel, whom he had delivered out of the hand of the Egyptians. And Jethro said, blessed be the Lord, who has delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians and out of the hand of Pharaoh, who has delivered the people from under the hand of the Egyptians. Now remember, we're looking at God's care for people when they maybe don't even recognize that this is God caring for them. We're still on, you don't really see it yet, right? Okay, so here comes Moses with his wife and kids, you know, and they're in the tent talking. Okay, that's cool. So, verse 11. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all gods, for in the thing wherein they dealt arrogantly, he was above them. And Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took a burnt offering and sacrifices for God. And Aaron came, and all the elders of Israel, to do what?
Eat bread
with Moses' father-in-law in the presence of God. And again, that's the covenant of salt, right? You didn't just eat with anybody in the East. If this was a guest in your home, a lot of times the master of the home would serve the guest, but not eat with the guest. Because when you eat with, now there's salt on that food, you're partaking of a covenant of salt with that person. That's why a lot of times the master of the house, they would serve their guests, but not eat with their guests. What is it in Revelation? Jesus said, any man, how does that go? Revelation 3:25? Sorry, this is sort of off topic, but I think this would be a good one to go with that, I think. I think it's Revelation 3:25, if there is such a verse. What's that, sort of like going to a restaurant and ordering off menu, right? Let's see if it's further. It's verse 20. There is no verse 20. It's verse 20. It says, behold, this is Jesus talking. Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man hear my voice and open the door, I will come into him and will sup with him and him with me. You know, not I'll serve him food. I'll eat with him. Well, isn't that great to be able to have that with Jesus Christ? Well, here anyway, they ate together in verse 12. Moses and Aaron and all the elders of Israel. Gives you an idea. You know, verse 7 says Moses did obeisance to Jethro, right? Now here's Moses and Aaron and all the elders of Israel eating together with Jethro after Moses had invited Jethro into his tent. All these things are giving you the idea. This is not just any relative. They're not just doing this because, oh, it's Moses' father-in-law. They didn't take this stuff real lightly back there, and certainly Moses didn't take stuff with the things of God lightly. So these are helping us to sort of get an idea of the kind of human being that this guy Jethro is. He's not somebody just stumbled in off the street. This is quite a guy. Verse 13, it came to pass on the morrow that Moses set to judge the people, and the people stood by Moses from the morning to the evening. And when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he did to the people, he said, what's this thing that you're doing to the people? Why are you sitting thyself alone, and all the people stand by you from morning to evening? And Moses said to his father-in-law, because the people come to me to inquire of God. When they have a matter, they come to me, and I judge between one and another, and I do make them know the statutes of God and his laws. And Moses' father-in-law, verse 17, said to him, the thing that thou doest is not good. You imagine saying something like that to a man like Moses? You know, I mean, Dr. Werrell's no longer with us, but can you imagine Dr. Werrell walking in? Dr. Werrell, this thing you're doing, this is not good. Well, that's what he said. Verse 18, you're going to surely wear away both you and this people that's with you. For this thing is too heavy for you. You're not able to perform it by yourself. Listen now to my voice. I will give you counsel, and God shall be with you. This is what you're saying to a guy who has parted an ocean. You do what I say, and God's going to be with you. That's what he's... And keep in mind, 2 Timothy, all scripture is God-breathed and what? Given by inspiration of God and profitable. So there's a... It's profitable. Did God have to have this written down if he didn't want to? He didn't have to include this in here, but he did. And it tells you it's profitable if you remember what... So there's some reason that God's having this stuff written down here. All right, verse 19. You listen to what I tell you, and I'll give you counsel, and God shall be with you. You be for the people to Godward, that you may bring the causes to God. Verse 20, and you shall teach them ordinances and laws, and shall show them the way wherein they must walk and the work that they need to do. Verse 21, moreover, you shall provide out of all the people able men, capable people, such as respect God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place people like that over them to be rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, and rulers of tens. And let them judge the people at all seasons. And it shall be that every great matter they'll bring to you, but every little matter they can judge. And that way it's going to be easier for you, and they shall carry the burden with you. Verse 23, if you do this thing, and God commands you so, then you shall be able to endure, and all this people shall also go to their place in peace. Verse 24, so Moses told his father-in-law, who do you think you are telling me all these things? He doesn't say that, does it? Verse 24, so Moses listened to the voice of his father-in-law and did all that he had said. And Moses chose able men out of all Israel, made them heads of the people, rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, rulers of tens. And they judged the people at all seasons. The hard causes they brought to Moses, but every small matter they judged themselves. And Moses let his father-in-law depart, and he went his way into his own land. So here you got a whole chapter. You get introduced to Jethro in verse 1, and by verse 27, he's out of here. And the whole chapter is just about Moses' father-in-law and his interaction with Moses, and you get an idea from the early parts of the chapter, the kind of man that this guy Jethro was, and then what a help he gave to Moses. And it helped to keep Moses from just wearing away. And at the beginning of the chapter, did you really have the idea that things were going to work out the way that they worked out by the end of the chapter? Not really. There's no place prior to this where it's recorded that Moses is asking God to, you know, I can't handle all this by myself. There are places, but not prior to this. You know, so it just was one of those things where you think God maybe knew that Moses was a little bit overburdened. Seems like he probably did. And he sends this guy Jethro. Didn't seem obvious at first. He's just bringing my wife and kids. But he was a heck of a guy. You could tell because Moses invited him into the tent. You know, they gave him the covering, they had the covenant of salt, so on and so forth. And by the time the guy leaves, boy, what a benefit he had been. And that was God watching over Moses. Not just Moses, but over all the children of Israel to take care of them. You know, even though there's no record that somebody asked God, oh, we need help with all this responsibility. But God knew, you know, and all those things. And it's sort of like that manna when he first showed up. Oh, what is it? Oh, this is Jethro. You know, sort of like Joseph. They're throwing him in the pit. What's this? Well, that's going to end up saving the Christ line. You know, there's so many things. And if God, you know, it says in Romans 15, what is it, 4, I think, whatsoever things written aforetime were written for us to ignore. Oh, sorry, that was the other verse. No, it's written for our learning. And it says in Malachi that God doesn't change, right? Well, if God watched over people back in those old times, he's not going to do it today? Of course he is. You know, it's neat to see how they didn't always recognize right away, oh, that's God. You know, here they are throwing Joseph into the pit. Oh, this is great, because now I'm going to be able to save the Christ line. You know, he didn't. And with Jethro coming, you know, who knew? But by the time he left, wow. You know, look at one more. Look at 1 Samuel chapter 23. This will be a quick year. There's a lot of places like that. You know, I just think it's... Like, you don't always... I'll speak for myself. And this is something I really do... I want to get better at it. You know, it's one thing for God to do something for you. But it really... He still does it for you if you recognize that it was God doing it, or if you don't recognize that it was God doing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if you recognize that that was God that did that, it really puts that helium in your heart, mm-hmm. right? And if you do not recognize that it was God doing that, you don't get that helium in your heart, so to speak. You know, and it's just, you know, and you're thankful to God anyway. Oh, God, I'm thank you that this thing worked out. But if you know that he had his fingers on this thing, yeah, it's just a bigger thank you. It's just different, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. 1 Samuel chapter 23, Saul is wrongfully trying to kill David. So anyway, that was what it was. We're going to drop down to verse 22. Saul is kind of messed up right now. Well, even in verse 21, Saul said, "Blessed be ye of the Lord, for you have compassion on me." Here's a guy endeavoring to murder somebody. Oh, God bless you. You know, blessed be thou of the Lord. And we would say, oh, God bless you. God, you got such compassion on me. Oh, it's been so long since I've been loved like this or whatever. You're going to help me to murder this guy. God bless you. Whatever. Verse 22. "Go, I pray you," he's talking to these people, "go, I pray you, prepare yet, and know and see his place where his haunt is." Must have been Halloween. You know, means where he's hanging out. "And who has seen him there? For it is told me that he deals very subtly." Told him. Yeah, he's got first-hand experience with that stuff. He don't need somebody to tell him. He knows. Verse 23, "See therefore and take knowledge of all the lurking places where he," David, "hides himself. And come ye again to me with the certainty, and I'm going to go with you, and it shall come to pass, if he's in the land, that I will search him out throughout all the thousands of Judah." And they arose and went to Ziph before Saul, but David and his men were in the wilderness of Maon, in the plain on the south of Jeshimon. So Saul is, you know, again, if you've read this, you know, records, you know, this was like a record with a scratch in it with Saul. Try to kill David, he got away. Let's try to kill him again, he got away. Let's try to kill him again, he got away. Let's try to kill him again, he got away. It was just the way it was with Saul. Verse 25. "Saul also and his men went to seek him, to look for him. And they," not Saul and his men, some other people, "told David, wherefore he," David, "came down into a rock and abode in the wilderness of Maon." He didn't go, you know, it says into a rock. Some translations, into a fortress, into a hold, something like that. I really don't know, you know, but not necessarily that he drilled a hole inside of a rock and crawled in, whatever it was. Verse 25 in the middle, "And when Saul heard that, he pursued after David in the wilderness of Maon. And Saul went on this side of the mountain, and David and his men on that side of the mountain. And David made haste to get away for what?
Fear of Saul.
You know, some of that stuff, you know, I heard somebody years ago, if you're in a pasture and you think the pasture is empty, and you're here in the middle, and then you hear a noise and you look, and here's a bull with these big antlers charging right at you, you might not want to say, "I'm not afraid." You might want to get the H out. You know, oh, but you shouldn't be afraid. Sometimes, and there are a lot of places you can read in the scriptures, you know, some places where, I think it's 1 Samuel 25, I think it is, where David was sore afraid of such and such. Didn't mean he wasn't trusting God. He just realized, you know, if you don't do something pretty quick, this is going to be the end of the road for you. You know, so it says, verse 26, "He made haste to get away for fear of Saul, because Saul and his men compassed or encircled David and his men round about to take them." That's not a good situation, is it? I mean, if you were in a war situation and there was two groups, one group had the other group entirely surrounded, which group would you like to be a part of? Not the group that's surrounded. Well, that's the group that David was in. So what's going to happen? Verse 27, "But there came a messenger to Saul saying, 'Hurry up and come, for the Palestinians, the Philistines, have invaded the land.' Wherefore Saul returned from pursuing after David and went against the Philistines. Therefore they called that place the Rock of Division." And David went up from thence and dwelt in strongholds at En-Gedi. So again, here's David, kind of like Joseph down in that pit. What's going on? Where's God? I'm here down in this pit. Here's David, encircled. I mean, what? Oh, a messenger came. You're getting invaded over here. I know you want to get David, but they had to leave to help protect the Israelites. You think God maybe had something to do with that? Not necessarily the Palestinians invading the land. Why didn't they invade the land some other time? You know, or how come, why did it just work out that way? You know, people a lot of times will use the phrase, oh, that was just, boy, you're shot full of luck, right? Yeah. They'll say stuff like that. Well, you know, a lot of times it's just God tenderly watching over his people. And I thought these were great records where, you know, just because we don't see stuff all the time, you know, like with Joseph in the pit, David here, he's surrounded. Moses is burdened down, but he didn't really see that he needed help. Just because we don't see stuff, that doesn't mean that God's not doing a lot of stuff for us. He's pretty good at watching over his family. You know, so I thought about that with the manna. You know, they were looking right at it. They didn't really see what it was they were looking at. And it's nice when we do, when we see that, hey, that was God doing that thing for me. And it gives you that helium in your heart when you know tenderly he is watching over us.